Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast. Paul Danner Jr. here with you, along with Jim Osarski, as we are refreshed. You know, a lot of times we come on at the beginning of this podcast and we bemoan how tired, exhausted, right, coffee-fueled we are, but there's none of that. Well, maybe.
No.
Not for me. Not really. I mean, you might be a little bit, but...
Yeah, well, you know.
Refreshed.
Yeah, I got went home, so like many Bengals players... left the city for a little while, go spend time with some family in Wisconsin and Illinois.
Yep.
So, yeah. But now it's good.
So you're feeling good. We're a little fresh. So we can attack this week with a fresh frame of mind.
Right.
And really get after it. In a year, well, first of all, I'll just say this. In a year that we haven't had a whole lot of storylines other than Bengals keep winning and Andy Dalton keeps playing better, you know, we have the arrival of really our first major storyline of the year, and one that we've sort of been awaiting, and that's the Vontaze Burfict storyline. So we're going to dive into that. I want to give you a little bit of heads up, some other things that we're going to talk about and what we've got on today's podcast. We've got some Twitter questions. A few of you shouted out some things that you wanted us to talk about using hashtag BBP because you know that hits a soft spot of my heart. So I appreciate that. So we'll try to jump into a few of those topics that you guys wanted us to talk about. Special teams, linebackers, defensive backs, and maybe even another special topic or two that we might, you know, divulge some inside info on. We'll, of course, talk about Burfict. You'll hear from Paul Gunther. You'll hear from Condescending Marv, who we saw again today, who was out kind of Marvin Lewis back into his special way that he has in dealing with issues that make him a little squeamish, and that's by taking it out on us. So we'll have some of that for you. We'll have a little bit of former Pittsburgh Steeler, current Cincinnati Bengal Chris Carter, talking about Ben Roethlisberger and just kind of the Steelers in general and how they approach the Bengals. And then, to close it off, I had a conversation with our good friend, friend of the program, friend of the blog, friend of the BBP, Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 and 700 WLW. We chatted for about 25 minutes or so about the Bengals, state of the fan base, pretty much all things about where this team is at right now and just feelings in general over where this season sits as the Bengals come off the bye week. So we have all that for you. That'll be on the back half of the podcast for you. So now you know what to expect.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're ready.
Mo's just, you know, I think Mo was happy that it was just you and him, because I, you know, I'd have to give him. It's almost NBA season, Paul. There's no NBA in Cincinnati. I'm not going to derail it too bad here.
Derail.
But,
go ahead.
But, you know, he loves the Knicks.
He does love the Knicks.
And I grew up in Chicago with the Bulls. And, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
And I had to give it to him. I was giving it to him.
It's not really
fair. I mean,
we're
going back 20 years, but still.
It is. It's not really fair to grow up a Bulls fan in the 90s and talk trash. Yeah, you had the greatest player in the history of basketball. Congratulations. You beat up on just about everybody. I mean, that's just kind of the way it
goes. Especially Mo's Knicks.
Yeah.
He just gets so sad.
He does get – it is sad. This whole situation is sad. I mean, and there's been I've gone on his show a number of times. We've done hours in the studio, and regardless, I always love getting into Nick's conversation because it's always so bleak.
Yeah,
I mean, there's never a point where you ever feel, you know what, things are starting to trend in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's just always bleak, and then they sign Carmelo to that ungodly contract, the guy who does nothing but lose everywhere he goes. Ball, I mean, ugh. Sorry, this is not the the mix.
Right. No,
this is not Knicks sadness podcast.
By all means, you can hashtag Mo.
Yes.
The Knicks suck. Yeah. Hashtag BBP.
Hashtag BBP.
He'll know what's good.
Casey's looking for a link to, we'll make sure you set him up properly.
Right.
So look for that later on in the show. But first, let's talk about topic 1A, I think, for this week as the Bengals head to Pittsburgh for a big showdown with the Steelers, who are 4-3, and that is Vontaze Burfict. We've touched on this topic a bunch recently, attempting to read the tea leaves a bit on what exactly is happening here, because what we have heard, and those of you that listen to the BBP every week have heard previous conversations and previous quotes from Marvin Lewis and Vontaze himself talking about their excitement about November 1st and expectations that on November 1st, they just wanted to make sure that he's 100% ready to go on November 1st. Well, November 1st is upon us. And Monday, Vontaze Burfict doing the same thing he's been doing, and Marvin Lewis talking about how nothing until he's a part of this team, then he's just a guy in rehab, and he's going to continue to be a guy in rehab until he's cleared for practice. When he's ready, he's ready. Right?
Right.
So as far as where it stands right now, let me just give you this. This was our first comment heard from our good friend, Condescending Marv, as I asked him about where they're at with gauging Vontaze Burfict.
How much is this week about gauging how he looks Burfict? I mean, where is it?
Well, we won't gauge him until we put him back to practice. We gauge he's done a good job in the rehab, and he continues to be in the rehab until he's not. And that's just where we are. It's not a, there's not a big thing. You guys will make more of it than there really is. When he's ready, he'll be ready, and that's when he'll come back to practice, and then we'll go from there. But other than that, we're wasting time talking about somebody that's not on the team.
When he's ready, he's ready, Jim.
Yeah,
and that's the bottom line.
That's true.
Apparently, it's not false.
No, it's not false. And dedicated listeners to the BBP will know that even after the initial optimism, I think we've done a good job sort of trying to temper. Well, I feel we've done a good job. I don't think anybody listens, because then we get constant tweets.
Yeah.
Perfect's ready. When is he ready? And it's like, no. I mean, this was always the target date. I mean, for the PUP and for as like optimistic as they were. I mean, the last few weeks, Paul, we've gone back and forth like, we should kind of slow the roll a little bit on Vontaze being ready for Pittsburgh. And, I mean, I guess something could change in the next – between people listening to this podcast and Sunday, but I, from what we saw Monday afternoon outside Paul Brown Stadium, I don't see that happening.
No, I don't either, and I just, it's at the point where, and we discussed a little bit before, that it's, they have earned themselves the luxury of being able to take it slow, but it doesn't change the fact that it appears between what was said and discussed on cutdown day, which was that there was a tough decision where they almost felt like it could have gone either way, that they activated him, so basically thinking that he would be ready within 3 or 4 weeks, to now he's not even ready for now week 7.
Right.
So something happened between now and then. Now, I'm not saying it's a setback in a traditional sense, but clearly, it has not progressed at the speed that everyone, I think, anticipated, or at least the expectations that were put out there. And this is why coaches don't like to be put timelines out there, because it's the type of stuff would happen. But the PUP was a very clear timeline, and there seemed to be optimism from player, from coach, that he would be back at this point, and he's not. Not right now. I mean, who knows what can happen? I mean, I guess they could be hiding a bunch of stuff and things can change, but that's not the impression that we're getting.
No, yeah, and it's he just, I know, I'm sure some people might see some video of Tez sort of being athletic off practice Monday, but it hasn't changed much. That's the thing, Paul, right? So people have tweeted us, Instagrams from Buffalo where he's running ladders and
he's been running ladders.
He's doing kind of the same stuff we saw 8 weeks ago.
You know what he's also doing? He's also constantly huffing and puffing and leaning right. over and exhausted. He does not look like a guy that's in shape.
Yeah.
Or anywhere near shape to go out there and play. Now, what he does bring when he is ready is a game-changing feel for the game plan and a connection with Paul Gunther and how to run his defense. And assuming he can be that same guy, he can absolutely be one of the best players that they have out there. But right now, I to me, and correct me if you think this is wrong, I think we might agree on this. What stands in the way between Vontaze Burfict and playing is conditioning.
Yeah, it didn't look. It didn't on Monday. It didn't look good. He looked tired.
Mm-hmm.
And we practiced. It was an interesting coming off the bye week. It wasn't your typical Monday. So, for those to bring inside a little bit, they practiced essentially for like 30 minutes before we were allowed to go out there. So Tez was sort of winding down his workout when we came out, and it was, I mean, so we're talking 20 minutes, no pads, no, just running around, and
in shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, he went doubled over, he took a knee. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if that's for our benefit, just to kind of like, so we could talk about this and put it out in the ether that he's not in shape. I mean, neither that he's up, should be up for an Oscar later, but.
And I don't know why they would want to hide that. Right. Unless they're thinking, okay, big game against the Steelers, try to make it completely look like he's not going to play. But at some point he's going to practice.
Right.
You're not
going to
hide
exactly.
You're not going to not practice him to hide him from the Steelers.
Yeah.
So there's no
exactly.
So there's no – for those that are thinking that it's something along those lines, there's no real reason to do that. I mean, there really isn't. It's you should just – he needs to just be out there and getting into practice as soon as possible if he's ready for that. And that's why, you know, you thought it was a possibility of seeing him.
Right.
And we haven't because that it must mean that he's not ready.
Right. And for as much as, Coach Marvin Lewis didn't want to talk about him, I mean, just in the time that I've been here, Paul, and the relatively few injuries the team has suffered since mini camps when guys have missed practice, at least to me, Marvin has been consistent with, in order to play, you must practice. And the Bengals aren't in a situation right now, health-wise, where, you know, Tez could practice Thursday, they cut a guy Friday, and all of a sudden he's ready to go. Like, they don't need to do that sort of thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
At least to me, like, he would have to practice. You can't do this, like, ruse situation. And then you project forward. They play in 4 days after this.
Yeah.
Or after Sunday.
Yeah.
So the timing of it just doesn't seem right no matter what.
Yeah. I get the impression the timeline has moved back.
Yeah.
That's the impression. And that's what – if you look at the signs and just the basics of what it all should mean and what the process it should be going through if he was going to be playing soon, none of that's being followed.
Right.
And so you have to assume at that point, unless something changes dramatically, and it could, but I doubt it, that the timeline of whatever it was going to be has moved back. And like I've been saying, you know, it should be all about making him an effective player at the end of December and into January. That's
right.
What his whole season should be based around. If that means getting him in better shape, if that means, you know, reassuring that he can do football moves before you even put him into that 3-week window, then so be it. But none of that has started yet, so we'll have to see how that is going forward. I do want to bring in Paul Gunther real quick and just some sound from him discussing briefly about just kind of what Burfict's effect could be whenever he comes back and how quickly he can reacclimate. So here's a little bit of Paul Gunther about the status and his view on Vontaze Burfict.
Not talking about timetable on Vontaze, but just from a coaching standpoint, whenever he were to return, how much time do you need with him to practice, to be in there, or is it something where he knows it so well, he could just hop right in and play?
From X's and O's standpoint, I think he can pick it up in a day. I mean, he's that smart. He knows our system inside and out. You know, from a physical standpoint, everyone's different. So, you know, I remember You know, I talked about it, was it a couple years ago? He hurt his ankle in practice on Friday or Thursday when we were traveling to San Diego. He was in a boot. He was in a boot on Saturday, and he went out on Sunday and played one of his best games as a Bengal. So, you know, all guys are different. So once he gets out there, whenever he does, and he gets going, it's all going to be feel at that point. See how he feels and go from there.
What do you think his conditioning is?
Oh, obviously, it's just like anybody else coming. It's like coming into training camp. You know, you're not going to be in football shape right away, so you can't, you know, play a whole bunch of snaps right away, but we'll have to ease him into it when he gets back.
So whenever he plays, it's going to be, might be 20 instead of
15. Yeah, we'll monitor that.
How different would your plan be if Vontaze was in compared to if he wasn't? Does it change things dramatically?
Yeah, oh, no question. Yeah, so, I mean, there's some you know, matchups and different things you can do with a player like that. I mean, he's one of our best players when he's in there. So it's no different having a top running back or top receiver. Your plan changes. So certainly when he gets back, that'll be good.
The fact he wasn't out there today, I mean, that would obviously impact your game planning. I mean, that's, if he could go, you'd think he would have been out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens here in the next day or two.
So there's our update on where the Burfict situation stands. The most discussed storyline on a season of non-storylines.
Yeah.
Except for the Bengals being one of five undefeated teams. You've only got you've got the most undefeated teams that there's ever been in the league since 1970 at this point in the season.
Right.
And you've got three of them in the AFC.
Right.
Denver doing it without scoring,
right,
on offense, remarkably. New England with a scare from the Jets this past weekend, but Tom Brady goes all Brady,
right,
and they end up winning to move to 6-0. And here we go. So it's on. The AFC race is certainly on. Denver, just the more they go without scoring, the more you wonder about them. But New England, there's no slowing up. I mean, they look like they've got it. They've got it humming at this point.
Yeah, there's but you know what's funny though, Paul? Pittsburgh's 4-3, barely, right?
Yeah.
So people look at New England's schedule and like, oh, they could 15-1, 16-0, and they deserve that. They've done it before, so they can, you know, people can talk about that with them. But you look at this Bengals schedule, which, you know, the narrative, hashtag narrative,
yep,
of the toughest schedule and all this other stuff. I mean, Pittsburgh is, like, very dangerous, kind of gimping along. But you look at, like, what's left on the Bengals schedule, and you're saying, I mean, 14-2 is possible. But the funny thing is you just said they go 14-2 and still have to play in first round.
They still could, yeah.
You know, if one of those losses is Denver.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, this AFC picture is a little crazy.
It is, you know, it's very top-heavy. It's a very clear delineation between those that are going to make the playoffs,
right,
and those that aren't, with maybe the surging Dan Campbell's jumping into. But for the most part, I think you, even at this point in the season, have a pretty good feel for how it's going to fall as far as the teams,
right,
that are going to be involved. I think Pittsburgh is going to be one of those. I you know, go back, listen to last week's, because it's still very relevant without the game in between.
Right.
We talked a lot about this rivalry, the Bengals and the Steelers, where it sits going forward. That was a big loss against the Chiefs. That was one,
yes,
that they really probably should. I mean, a team that's lost five in a row, a team whose offense has really no spunk to it, to beat you, regardless of who your quarterback,
right,
is rough for a team. I mean, that might be one they go back, they look back on the end of the year and say, damn, that's one that we,
yeah,
really needed. It certainly changes the picture a little bit when you consider what's now at stake for them on Sunday. When they're facing the possibility of a 3.5-game deficit with 9 games left,
yeah,
in the season for the Bengals. I mean, you could argue the Bengals might not lose more than 3 games the rest of the year,
right?
If they just win the games that they're supposed to. So,
yeah,
it could be the death blow.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I always look at the loss column, and yeah, you talk about 7-0 Bengals and a 4-4 Steelers. I mean, it's not baseball. I mean, you,
yeah,
can't really make up 4 games in 9.
Yeah,
presuming how. I mean, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, it would be a pretty much a knockout shot. Well, I do want to bring in a few of you guys had some questions that you wanted answered on the podcast this week, and of course, we love all of you that listen, so we want to make sure we get the answers to some of your questions in. And I'll start with a question about, let's see here. We've got a question from, I had a fight break out of my timeline today between a couple people about Vontaze Burfict, as it does. From one of our friends at, I don't know what this is supposed to say, Man Abul Hosen, possibly.
Thanks for tweeting.
Love the podcast. Worried about the LBs, the weakest position on LBs. The team. LBs. Weakest position on the team? Yeah, probably. I think Vinny Ray has done a good job of holding them together. For the most part, I wouldn't. The good part is that for the majority of the snaps, they only have two of them out there.
Right.
You know, I mean, that sometimes can be a guy like Sean Williams or what have you stepping in even as a nickel LB if they really had to. So you have, I don't think it's, linebackers are inherently, you know, can be, you come from wherever. And yeah. I don't think you need superstar. It can be, it's nice. It's a great thing to have, and it can change games if you have one, but I don't think it kills you like some other positions kill you. You can't have garbage corners. You can't have garbage defensive ends. You can have average linebackers and still have a really good defense.
Yeah, especially in this defense.
Yeah.
Where it is based on the front four and that rotation up front. I mean, it's, you know, man coverage and good safety play, which, you know, we can get into the concerns in the defensive backfield. But, yeah, I mean, when you've got the league leader in sacks, Geno Atkins is in that top tier as well. You know, you're just asking your linebackers to be responsible, fill run gaps, you know, cover what you need to cover. And that's what this group is doing. So, it's funny when you mention weakest position, you know, technically, yes, I guess when you look at the talent level. But I don't know, Paul, that defensive backfield to me, when was their last interception? When was their last big? I mean, it's funny. I'm not about to say they're the weakest, but it's one of those things where people want to talk about linebackers and lack of playmakers. But it's funny because the, you know, where are the plays?
Right.
From that defensive group in the backfield who's very talented, a lot of pedigrees. I mean, you know, Quez had an interception in Buffalo.
Yeah.
That was big. But I mean, whereas, you know, you're not seeing the game-changing type stuff either. So this defense as a whole has some work to do a little bit. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I mean, it actually plays into another topic. We have another question people asking about the defensive backs. So, you know, I these two sides, really, anything, I've been saying it for a while, the defensive line has been holding this whole defense together and covering up a lot of mistakes, I think. But some of those mistakes haven't been covered up, and you know, you don't think the Steelers are sitting in their film room watching the Bengals once a game end up staring at each other with their hands up in the air
right. In
that defensive backfield, not knowing what's going on? I mean, I still think that's a huge issue and one that they've got to get figured out, and who knows why it's happening, but it does continue. The only just egregious blown assignments that you see from this team on offense or defense is happening in the secondary.
Right.
So, I'd be almost as concerned with the secondary as I would be with the linebackers.
Right, yeah. I mean, for, you know, Vinny Ray and A.J. Hawk and Ray Maluga might get beat by a tight end or a backfield. But you know what? Those guys, for the most part, are making a tackle at that point. And it's a little gain, and, you know, I know it all adds up, but, you know.
Yeah.
The big plays are coming a little further down the field.
Yeah, no, no doubt about it. And, you know, Drager Patrick has been involved in those. Adam Jones has played really well. I think he's clearly been the number one corner on this team. And they need more consistency out of Drager Patrick. They probably could use a little bit more from the safety position as well. I mean, Reggie Nelson's found himself in the middle of that. He's missed some tackles.
Yeah.
Teams have been able to run on them. I mean, there's because of some missed tackles that we've seen at the second level.
Right.
Drager Patrick's had missed tackles. Reggie Nelson's had missed tackles.
Iloka doesn't look, I mean, after, you know, that ankle was in Oakland, pulled himself out in Baltimore, the only starter to miss a game at this point, and he hasn't quite looked together back there.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, it does seem to be a bit of, and they will have their hands full with the the first game of all those weapons being together for Pittsburgh this weekend. So thanks to the handyman at Brian Handy 1976, who had the question about the secondary. Also, J.F. Kirtley chiming in, K-I-R-T-L-E-Y. Thank you, John Kirtley.
There you go.
Thank you for listening to the BBP and sending in your questions. We appreciate those as always. Also, Jeff Riley wants to know about special teams. It seems the past three seasons Simmons' crew has had the worst games versus Pittsburgh. Yes, they have. That's correct. And in Pittsburgh is where it always seems to happen. Three punt returns against the Bengals for touchdowns over that time span. All of them in Pittsburgh. All of them by Antonio Brown, who has just had their number, owned them in every single way. It's just it's an oddity. It's interesting why this continues to happen, but plays like that are what flip games when you look back and say, okay, they lost two of those games by 10 points each. You don't think that it might have made a little bit of a difference in the game, right? A punt return for a touchdown. You know, that's – It's been a huge issue, but I do have some talk with Darren Simmons about the special teams unit and how they are approaching this Sunday in Pittsburgh. So here's a little bit of my conversation with Darren Simmons just about the Antonio Brown problem and how to fix it. So here's Darren Simmons.
Do you have to approach him differently than others? Does he do something different than others that he's caused so much
problems? Well, he's got confidence. I mean, he's got confidence right now. You know, he's got us a couple times, so he's obviously confident in that. So, so you certainly have to approach him differently.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do a better job than what we've done historically against him. I don't think you change, you know, everything that you do to try to nullify him and try to negate him.
Yeah.
We have to be smart about, you know, giving him opportunities to handle the ball.
Yeah. I guess it's just that simple. It's just to keep your responsibilities and do your job
The plays that he's made against us we just weren't. We had guys overplay. We had guys out of position trying to do something for someone else instead of just doing their own job.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got he's very adept at when somebody does get out of position, he somehow finds that. You know, and it just so happens it's been against us.
Yeah.
You know, you know, he's been hot against us.
Yeah.
No other way to put it.
Do you have to kind of just focus on kicking to the sidelines and just trapping?
We always focus on kicking the sideline. We do that against everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what every team tries. You can't get, you know, like I said before, too, you can't try to get too cute. When you get too cute, about try to where you place the ball, that's when you make mistakes. We just got to try to limit the amount of space this guy has from when he catches the ball till we have the first penetrators in. You know, we get a better job of staying sound in our field lines. I think the play he made against us a year ago, we have him tackled, and he breaks out, he gets out of the tackle and reverses his field. You know, so we have we had some people kind of overplaying the play, and they got caught over squeezing, and when he reverses his field, we're out of position. So I think this guy's got to trust to be everybody around him. And we can't, you know, over-analyze or overdo things. You have to just be sound and do a job. You know, he's damn good.
Yeah.
I get it. He's damn good. But we play damn good guys every week, I think, too. He's just, for whatever reason, he's been more successful against us than others. And I get, you know, you got to give a lot of credit. He's a hell of a player.
All right, so we hear a little bit from Darren Simmons about Antonio Brown, who is just a Bengals killer. But really, everybody that plays for the Steelers have been Bengals killers, really. Four of the last five now at Heinz Field. It's just a house of horrors for this team, and it always has been.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because the one thing that you always could say about football and you know, streaks of any kind is, you know, different teams, different guys, and but the funny thing is last 4 years, this is the same Bengals team. It's the same guys for the most part. So, I mean, it's you know, this will be my first experience going in there and seeing what this is all about. But that has to be a little disconcerting.
Oh,
because it is the same guy. I mean, you know, those special teamers and coverage might be, you know, a few of those guys might be different.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, wow, something – There must be something strange then, right?
He just seems to always find a way to beat this team. So, let's see what else. What else do we need to get? What else is going on here?
You know, we could talk about Chris Carter.
Yeah,
former Steeler.
Yes,
and the reason Chris is so great is A, he's a great personality, but he spent 3 years in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
and said he's like. Told a story about he thought Ben Roethlisberger's ankle was broken and snapped the other way, and a guy comes back to play. And the toughness of that dude, and then also the mindset Mike Tomlin is sort of drilling into his guys for Bengals week.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, here's a guy who was there, and not that long ago. I mean, last year, Cincinnati and Indy, you know, spent some time. So, I mean, he's not that far removed from knowing what that's like on that side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was rumors when he first came here that he was brought here primarily as somebody who could give some insight to the Steelers, and he can. And I did, you know, it's weird. We go around the locker room, and you know, we all joke about go-to guys that we all go to, that certain groups of people go to. Secretly, Chris Carter is an absolute go-to.
Yeah.
But I don't know that anybody else really realizes.
He's a gem.
He is a gem. He's fantastic. He's a really great guy. He's really interesting. He's got lots of good anecdotes and insight into a number of different things. I mean, the guy's playing linebacker. He's played on the line. He's played in Pittsburgh. He's a great story and a guy sort of overcoming the odds a bit in making this team at all. He plays special teams significantly.
Right.
So, I mean, he touches on a bunch of different stuff. And I was doing a story on Vinnie Ray. And he told this great story about how he makes sure he always sits right next to Vinny Ray and watches the notes that he takes. And that he thought it was hilarious that Vinny wrote notes to himself in his notebook. It's like, run faster, hit harder on that play. You suck, you know. He's just like, it's great. That's the type of stuff that us. I mean, that's a golden nugget to people like us. So, but he's a really interesting guy to talk to. We got to get him on Beyond the Stripes soon.
Yeah,
I think that he's one of those guys that we definitely want to have that. And if you see that he's on, you should come down because you'll enjoy it. He's a really good guy to talk to. So, we have conversation.
We do.
So, we'll just to give you a little bit of a little convo with Chris Carter. Here's Jim talking with Chris from Monday at the Bengals locker room.
Is he kind of a different dude?
I've seen him come back from some nasty injuries, man. I mean, I know there's one time he felt like it looked like he snapped his ankle in half once. And, I mean, it was back 2-3 weeks later. I mean, he was in pretty much a cast the next day. I don't know how he came back, but he came back, man. He was a freaking nature. You got to give him his respect. You know, he's earned it over the years. His resume, you know, shows it. And at the end of the day, I don't think it shakes the rocks boat any for us. You know, we got to do what we got to do. All their quarterbacks have been playing good, if you ask me. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter who's playing. We just got to be prepared in all situations.
Yeah. Is it underrated? I mean, because it's one thing to come back from injury or maybe you push the limits of when the docs say you're good to go. But it seems like that guy, he still plays at a really high level. I mean, because it's a physical sport.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can play 80%, and you can tell it's like 80%.
Yeah.
But
he's won a lot of games coming back from an injury before. You know, every play is different, man. Like I said, and I'm not a doctor, so there's no telling who's going to come back.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Who's going to come back, how he's going to do. As long as you know, we execute our assignments, you know, 100%, take care of the things that we need to do, then we'll be prepared for whoever steps in on the field. Like I said, you know, I think you know, I know, we all know Ben's a great athlete.
Right.
I mean, he's got great pocket presence, he's able to scramble very well. Whether this hinders him or not, who knows, man.
Right.
But, you know, we just got to make sure we put the pressure on it and leave it up to them to decide that. You know, we just got to do our job.
Right. I mean, and again, you guys are all all big guys too. But is that true? You know, in the sense where we'll watch television and announcers are like, "Well, you can hit him, but it's always bringing him down and not letting him finish a play." Having not that you guys would hit him necessarily, but having seen it, is he that difficult to? I mean, for someone his size and that I mean, you would think he'd be able to get to him.
He's got a really big frame, yeah. You know. So some quarterbacks are able to avoid a sack by, you know, getting rid of it as they're falling down or something like
right.
that. He's got a lot of options, the way that they set their offense up and their schemes up, to get rid of it too. And, I mean, he's got a big frame, so you might right. be tackling him. It's going to take him forever to hit the ground. And in that okay. time, he slings it.
Right.
So you got to be sure to wrap his arms up, yeah. wrap up completely. And that just comes back to technique tackling.
Right.
You know, you got an opportunity to hit him. You know, things get chaotic in the box. You know, they
right.
get chaotic when you're going after the QB because he's got a bunch of guys in there trying to stop you from hitting him.
Right.
And it's, you know, no mistake about our intention is to hit
right.
anybody right. back there with the ball.
Right.
But, you know, we just got to be technically sound. And I think it makes things a lot easier when you come in, you know, half-ass tackling there, you know, not doing it the way that, you know, you're supposed to do it. That's when he's able to kind of extend those plays, or that's when he's able to shed guys off.
Right.
And also, to his respect, he's got great presence in there, man. Like, he has a really good feel for who's coming in and when they're coming.
Right.
Even guys from his backside.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've seen him do it for years.
Yeah.
I mean, great athletes come in from his backside. He don't even look at him. He'll just step back.
Yeah.
Like, how did you know he was coming? But, you know, hey, it's the NFL, man.
Right.
You expect to see that.
What's the mood like there? I mean, this is, 4-3, 6-0. I mean, you guys are in a spot for a win. I mean, the math really set some things. I mean, you know, Mike, I mean, what can you, not that you're going to crawl into his head, but I'd imagine, is it a little more, I mean, are they like an even keel group? Is this kind of a...
Very aggressive group, very physical. You know, I know when I was there, anytime we get ready to play the Bengals, they'd always tell us, hey, make sure you do some extra curls this week. Make sure you do, you know, some extra stuff in the weight room, you know, because it's going to be a physical game. And, you know, obviously Baltimore was the number one enemy, but,
right.
like, this game was always, we prepared more for it when I was at that, you know, team.
Right.
We prepared more for it than any other game because we knew if you didn't, you were going to be getting carried out of the stadium.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's been like that every single time. Every year, yeah. twice a year, that was a conversation we were having. So, no doubt in my mind, they're having that same conversation yeah. right now.
Right.
Because it was like clockwork, you
right.
know, and since hey, weight room this week, do a little right. extra, you know? So,
right.
I know... They're coming in with their hard hats, and we never took ours off,
right.
you know. So it's gonna be an exciting game, a lot of contact.
All right, so we've got a little bit of a feel. There's a possibility, you know. I don't want to divulge our predictions just yet. We save those for later in the
yeah.
week. But this is as close as I've been all year, and as torn as I've been probably. Going into a pick, and I can say early in the week gut, this could change. I reserve the right to change. Early in the week gut is saying Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah,
I just they're when they get, that's gonna be such a lift getting Roethlisberger back, and there's gonna be such a target on the Bengals chest, and there's such a history of this team just slamming the Bengals down to earth at all times. Plus Bengals have never been 7-0 in their history. Even their best team's been 6-0 and then lost to go to the shot at 7. So I'm just saying it's a pop. This could be the one, but I reserve the right to change that opinion. My final answer will be in Sunday's game day section and on our Friday videos.
Yeah. Yeah, I disagree.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know. So
this will be your first trip to Pittsburgh.
It will be my first trip to Pittsburgh.
Heinz Field is great, actually, from a Scribe perspective. The food is fantastic. Carving station. Number one, if you got a carving station, you've already won me over. I'm happy.
Yeah, well, see, we haven't really gotten into this. Maybe this is another BBP, but, Lambeau's the best, man. Lambeau's got multiple carving stations.
Now, see, that's impressive. I'm not saying that I wouldn't put them at the top of the list. I'm saying carving station is where it's
carving
starts.
Station
if you
is.
You want to be considered amongst the best in the
yes.
league. The carving station is the quarterback of
yeah.
of buffets.
And there's a top
food.
10. Not everybody's got one.
No, not
they
everybody
all
has
one.
One. They do. You can only have so many.
You can only have so many.
So, I mean, if you got a carving station, that means you can compete.
Right.
You can compete for a title. If you don't have a carving station, you can't compete for a title.
Yeah.
You've got EJ Manuel. You know,
God.
That means you got, he's the hot dogs of if quarterbacks were press box food,
oh.
would that be, no, that's one we need a whole other podcast for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, because that's who would be the bacon? Dalton is bacon. For let me tell you why. Because it all depends. Like some days you get awful. The bacon is just it's awful. It's there's no crisp to it. It's undercooked. And then some days it's just this pristine gem. And it's the best of all foods.
Yeah, you know,
for a while. So maybe now he's become they're cooking him right. Hugh Jackson is back there cooking the bacon up correctly, you know, to the proper crispness levels, and everything's coming up good.
It's funny because on our home game Periscopes, people always ask, "Yo, is this the week for Bad Andy?" And you're over there, and you're like, "Yeah, you know, it's about time." Bad bacon. And then the one who's got to say, "Nah, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good
bacon." And it's been that way all season long.
It's true. The bacon has been good all year.
See, I don't have the bacon scar tissue. No. I haven't had like a piece of bacon and it was like all fat.
Once you have one bad piece of bacon, you're burnt for life, man. You're always waiting to see. You're always worried that it's going to be that bad batch.
I keep going back to if quarterbacks are press box food, and I got sick in Tampa Bay in the preseason. So I don't know, man. EJ Manuel. Ooh.
Josh McCown. I mean, although Josh McCown actually had his moments. Yeah. So, you know, I guess Jay Cutler maybe would be the Tampa Bay post-game sandwiches of press box food.
Yeah, I don't know.
He will make you sick.
He might be Johnny Football.
He'll make you, yeah, well.
I see, but this could be.
Johnny Football would have to have, like, something illegal, like some PCP, like, just, like, spread on top of the bread or something like that, I feel like. It's got to be something halfway illegal.
It's a barbecue, man. It'll just set that thing on fire.
Johnny Football, yeah, it's just like, it's three bums behind the stadium cooking up some old pig over a barrel fire, you know? That's the Johnny Football. We can't even have access to it. On that note, we do actually have some legitimate Bengals talk. As I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the podcast, chatted it up with our good friend, my good friend and yours, ESPN 1530 and 700 WLW sports talk show host Mo Egger. Chatted up with him a little bit about where the Bengals are at and just a number of different topics, including the beauty of Provo, Utah. So anyway, take a listen to that, and Jim and I will check back with you in about 25 minutes.
All right, now to pop onto the back half of the Bengals Beat podcast. It's just been a while. It's been a while since we've chatted with our good friend Mo Egger over there at ESPN 700 WLW. Mo, welcome back to the BBP.
It's good to be here. You and I have chatted a lot, but it's usually me interviewing you, me getting your expertise. I have no idea what I could add to your particular vehicle.
Oh, you are the pulse of the fans, Mo.
I am.
And the pulse is good right now. Normally when you're the pulse of the fans, it's mainly, very fast heart rate, doctors are involved, but now everybody's all happy. So in sports talk radio land, it's nothing but unicorns and rainbows and candy, I assume, right?
You know what? This has been a weird year. I was thinking about this over the weekend. The Reds were so bad that even your most jaded, cynical, apprehensive Bengals fan, at least on the ones that I communicate with on the radio, they're even embracing this team, I think, more quickly than I would have thought. I think people were so beaten down by the baseball season that they couldn't wait for football to get here, and football, at least through the first 6 weeks, has exceeded their expectations. Now, do you still have the people who sit on their hands and wait for January? Sure. But I think the miserable baseball season sliding into an uber-successful first month and a half of the football season has – everybody's really pleasant and happy. You know, even like when I try to bring up anything that might get in the way or, I don't know, anything remotely not good, and there's not been a lot of that, I get a lot more pushback than usual. It's been a very, very pleasant surprise and very much welcome.
You know, and we get so used to, I mean, I know since I've been around this beat, to just hearing the constant negativity and everyone feeling like it's just waiting for the other shoe to drop and for everything to fall apart and, you know, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Everyone just waiting for that moment. But there's been a few seasons, and we've talked about this a number of times on and off air, about the 2005 season and how it just, for fans around here and just in general for the attitude, it felt different. It was one that just, everyone just universally believed and loved. You know, it's just like their favorite child. You know, you just loved it. You know, you think about those years and think about, wow, that was a special team. And is this group kind of getting that same feel for you at this point?
Well, to an extent, I think 2005 always felt to me like the beginning of something big. You know, it's why, you know, we look back on that Pittsburgh loss in the playoffs a little bit differently now. But I think even then, when they lost the game itself, remove the Carson Palmer injury from the equation, when they lost the game itself, I kind of remember feeling like, okay, they're going to be back and they're going to have more opportunities. They'll fix Carson. If he comes back next year, they have a chance to be really, really good. So that whole year to me felt like, wow, these guys are going to be good for a while. I sort of sense a little bit more urgency with this club because, you know, you've written about the window closing, and I think most people are familiar with what's going to be happening with the roster over the next couple of years. So I do detect a little bit more of a sense of urgency. I think there's just a little bit more sort of built-in jadedness just because it's been 10 more years since they've won a playoff game. But I think as entertaining and as interesting as they are, and I mean, I'll say this, and I think you guys, the people who are there every day, do a really good job of sort of highlighting the personality of this team and sort of what makes them go and how much fun they are. I think the public is catching on to that. But I don't know that this team, no matter what they do in the regular season, is going to be looked back on with much fondness if they don't win a playoff game. And I think the 2005 team for most of us is always going to be treasured, no matter what, just because it has been so long. But I think the playoff loss is basically a footnote. And I think this season, no matter what they do between now and January 3rd, what we're going to talk about at the top is what they do when they play in the playoffs. And so I think there's some differences, but you know, I sense an excitement building that reminds me a lot of 2005 that I don't think we had, you know, in 2009 when they won the division or really in any of the last 4 years.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a handle on whether or not this team is different? And what I mean by that is, I mean, I think we've both felt like what we've seen in regular seasons the last few years has felt like a team that is going to – it's got a different feel. They're going to win a playoff game. Obviously, 13 is the season that comes to mind when most people think about that. Do you feel like you ever can really predict or feel confident in this team, no matter what the scenario, even if they were 16-0, 15-1 type of a team going into the playoffs because of what has happened in recent history?
You know, I don't know that I should say that about the playoffs just because, you know, who knows who they're going to play, when they're going to play, where they're going to play. You know, the great thing about this team, and maybe the most surprising aspect of it is as much as injuries sort of shape the landscape of the NFL anymore, this team has been, knock on wood, it's almost scary how healthy they've been. Not just during the season, but in training camp and the preseason, you know, nothing freaky happened in the offseason. So I think it's still a little hard to put your finger on exactly how we're going to feel in January. But I'll say this, when you watch the rest of the league and you see so many teams that are just poorly coached. And I talked about this a lot last week. When the Bengals beat the Seahawks and they had to run the field goal unit out on the field in that panicked, you know, sort of sequence at the end of regulation, they got the kickoff. And went to overtime, and then there was a play in Buffalo, sort of a gadget play where Mohamed Sanu was supposed to throw, and the play broke down, and there was no panic, and he gained 8 yards, and I think they ended up scoring on that drive. And I look around the league, and I see the weird fake punts being called in Indianapolis, or whatever the Jets were doing at the end of their game against New England when they were trying to win. And these guys just seem really prepared. And really well coached, and that's easy to say when you're winning. And I'm not sure I always felt that way about the previous four teams. You know, obviously there were really, really good things that Marvin Lewis and his staff did, but these guys just seem on a week-to-week basis better put together, better prepared than almost anybody in the league that I watch, with, you know, obviously New England and Green Bay being exceptions. That feels different. Their look, and granted that the schedule hasn't exactly been the most challenging, but, I mean, how many games for the rest of the regular season are they going to be underdogs in? You know, I mean, I got to think Vegas is going to wait and see what's going to happen with Roethlisberger, and maybe when they go out to Denver. But I think you expect them to win almost every other game if you go on a game-by-game basis. And I think just the way they look and how prepared they are, I mean, it's – I think if you were to watch, you know, a side-by-side comparison of what this team has done in the first 6 weeks and almost any of the previous, heck, 10, and maybe 2013 being the exception, they just look different. There's a different feel to them. And so I think that gives people a little bit more hope in January. Now, when we get to January 9th or 10th or whenever that first playoff game is going to be, you know, there's going to be some apprehension. But I think if you look at this team through six games, there's just a different look to them.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. There is a different look. But you just wonder. And it will continue to be the biggest question with this team of, yeah, but what – that's in the back of their mind, you know. Will the mentality change? You know, they've played so loose. No situation has rattled them. But, you know, just like you're talking about a drive in the fourth quarter of a game, there's no pressure quite like, oh, no, we cannot lose another playoff game pressure. You know, even pressure in the fourth quarter against Baltimore or what was happening against Seattle, it's still, oh, you know what, we're going to win, and if we don't, oh well. But there's just no pressure because everybody that's going to be playing in that game essentially has been a part of those playoff losses, and you wonder how they will handle it. But I will say, because of what you've seen from Andy Dalton and what you've seen from this team in handling pressure like Baltimore and like Seattle, I think that is probably the biggest reason for optimism. You've seen them make comebacks and have big wins in big spots before and some very, you know, pressure-packed situations. But I think those are kind of make you think, well, okay, maybe they're grown up a little bit and they'll be able to put that behind them.
Yeah, you know, when they play in the playoffs, and I feel comfortable saying when they play in the playoffs, there's going to be a moment, whether it's a moment like Gio fumbling 2 years ago, whether it's a moment like, you know, you fall behind by 10 points or 14 points or something, and then maybe it's on the road because you have to go to Foxborough or somewhere. That's going to be the pivot point. I mean, in the last couple of years, there have been moments in games, you know, there was AJ running a streak route against Houston the second time they played him in the playoffs and Dalton missing them. There are going to be moments in games that make you, to give you that familiar sort of sinking feeling. And those are going to be the pivot points. And it could be in the first playoff game, and it could be if they're lucky enough or good enough to play in the second playoff game. But probably that first one, there's going to be, whether it's having to play from behind or trailing at the half or a key turnover in a big situation that you have to come back from, or you fall behind early, or maybe it's an opponent, you know? I mean, maybe they're having to play their longtime nemesis, the Pittsburgh Steelers, in their first playoff game, and a team that obviously has a quarterback, assuming he's healthy, who's won Super Bowls. There's going to be a moment or a thing that neither you and I can predict that I think that this team is going to have to overcome. And if they don't, it's going to be like the Geo fumble, where you just remember the worm turning, or it's going to be like when you found out last year against Indy that AJ wasn't going to play or that Jermaine Gresham wasn't going to be able to play, and you just knew they were going to lose. There's going to be that moment that I think it swings it, and we are going to know what that is as it happens. And the million-dollar question is, are they going to be able to finally overcome that? I think this team, based on what we know, and you know a heck of a lot more than I do, but they seem equipped more so than any of the previous four to be able to handle that. But, as you mentioned, it's basically the same group of guys that's never been able to handle those kind of things. And so that's coming. It's going to be interesting, and it's ultimately sort of going to determine how we view this season.
One last question, and I'll let you get back to planning your next trip to Provo, which I'm sure you found to be just an absolute delight. Beautiful, beautiful country. Let me ask you this. So, I mean, you hear from callers on a daily basis, and we've talked before about how they will just never turn towards Andy Dalton. He will never get the benefit of the doubt from this fan base. For whatever reason, they just didn't like him. Have you seen that change along with the general pleasant attitude towards the team with this run? Has he won over the fan base?
I think he's winning them over. I don't know that he's won them over, and we know when they will. But you know, I don't know. I as you do, I read and I listen to a lot of sports talk radio and read a lot of blogs in other parts of the country. And you know, I mean, they're what they say about like Matt Ryan in Atlanta isn't all that dissimilar from what we say about Andy Dalton. And what's often been said about Tony Romo is really not that dissimilar from what we say about Andy Dalton. We might think those guys have better skill sets, but I do think even the loudest Dalton critics, and you know, I've been one, it's hard to not watch him play and conclude that he's different and conclude that he just looks better and more comfortable. And you know, you've written about a lot the reasons for that. Their offensive line has been really good. Hugh Jackson seems to really, really know how to get the most out of not just Andy, but his wealth of weapons. They obviously have a very good offense. But I don't know. I think most people are willing to admit that when you watch Andy, he just looks better. And, you know, through six games, I don't think he's played six really good games in a row. I don't know that he has. I know he hasn't put up these stats. I mean, if you judge things solely by how does he look statistically, well, he's among the best in the NFL. I think there is a – maybe it's begrudging, but I do think there is a growing respect for what he's done. And I don't know how there is. Now, if he plays poorly against the Steelers or if he plays poorly in one of these primetime games that are coming up, and obviously if he plays poorly in the playoffs again – but we're going to revisit the same criticisms of Dalton. But the way he played in the fourth quarter against Seattle and the way he bounced back from his own mistake in the game against the Ravens, those were different types of moments. You know, when he fumbled against Baltimore, I mean, I'm expecting Dalton to go in the tank, Bengals lose the game, and we spend all week beating the guy up. And he came right back and threw an 80-yard touchdown pass and then delivered a game-winning touchdown drive. Those things seem different. And I do think people are being more fair with him than maybe even I expected them to be, because when I bring up Andy Dalton, I expect extreme opinions. I expect people who think he's great, or I expect even more people who think he's awful. And the truth has always been closer to the middle, and it's swinging more towards him being great. And perhaps surprisingly, I think people are giving him the credit that he's due. They'll still attach a yeah, but to it. And that's not going away until they win a playoff game. But I don't know how you watch him and not give the guy his due, at least through six games.
I would tend to agree with you, but it'll all go to hell if they lose a playoff game. So that's all. <You know? laughs> That's all. It will always end up being defined by whatever happens in January. That's what we'll spend all of our time talking about for the majority of 2016. Won't that be fun?
You know what's interesting is I brought this up last week, and I got shouted down by a lot of listeners, where we always talk about Andy Dalton's contract, right? But it's always the Bengals can get out of it. Like next year, let's say Andy Dalton wins a Super Bowl, and let's say he gets MVP consideration. Serious, like he gets votes. Do you think Andy Dalton should be the 20th highest paid quarterback in the league next year?
I mean, the Bengals, if – The thing was, the Bengals looked like geniuses with that contract if he sucked or if he was unbelievable. That's
right.
Just it, because they set it up perfectly, because they get a bargain if he's great and they get out of it if he's not, you know? And
right.
And you got to credit the team for putting that together.
You definitely do. It's look, the Bengals don't sign bad contracts. I've often said I wish that the baseball team upriver would follow suit. But I don't know. That to me is interesting, and it might not be on you know, our radar right now. But if you're Andy Dalton, you sign this deal, you have to put up with annually people wondering, are they going to get out of the contract? You had to put up with the public booing at the celebrity softball game, which I know he sort of diminished this past week. You had to put up with a summer where we spent all sorts of time talking about a dude who's never thrown a pass in an NFL game. And you're going to go into next year. Like right now, he would be the 20th highest paid quarterback in the league next year. He is playing this year like a top five guy. This contract is still going to have the stipulation that the Bengals can bail every spring. Now, they're not going to do that if he continues to play really well. I don't know. If I'm him and I know that suddenly I'm worth more based on what the market dictates that the quarterbacks make, I'm happy to be a bargain for a while. I'm not being a bargain for my entire career. And I'm not saying he will hold out or should hold out. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. But to me, that's interesting because we always talk about the contract from the standpoint of how the Bengals can bail and how beneficial it is to him. But I'm a big fan of people getting what they're worth. And you can't tell me that if he continues to have a superlative season and wins playoff games and maybe even wins a Super Bowl, that he's not worth more than some of these guys who are making a lot more money than him.
Well, we know that wouldn't go over very well in a couple of offices at Paul Brown. If that became the case. Because the bottom line is the Bengals, the initial reaction, what everyone said was, wow, $96 million to Andy Dalton, are you crazy? You know, and they took a chance on a guy that hadn't proven himself yet and you know, gave him that number if he could go out there and achieve it. And, you know, I don't think he's the type of guy to go back on that. And he will be making quite a bit of money come the tail end of this contract if he's still playing well. That's an interesting discussion. I promise that we will have it again when we have nothing but topics that we need to search for in the office.
Well, which is where I was leading up to a week where there was no game. So it was the perfect time to bring it up.
Understandable. Hey, Mo, I appreciate it, as always, for coming on the podcast, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you again real soon, man.
The next time I go to Provo, you're coming with me. It's going to be a blast.
I refuse. I've never said no, but I feel like that's going to be a bad decision for me.
Do you like 3-2 beer?
I don't.
Have you ever had 3-2 beer?
You know, I've had Bud Light. Isn't that pretty much what it is?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Listen to you. Shots fired.
I don't know. I what is the percentage of Bud Light? Isn't it like 4-2? I mean, what are we really talking about here?
I don't know. I think it's like 5. I don't know. But all of the beer in Provo was 3-2 beer. And they have such – first of all, I know you have to wrap this up. They have 3 bars in all of downtown Provo. Between the 3, there's 1 television. One closes at 8 o'clock. The other closes after the other bar officially closes, and the other one stays open until midnight, and they serve 3-2 beer, and you're not allowed to order one until you are completely finished with the other. It's like, you know, it's like getting seconds at my dinner table when I was a kid. Then you go to BYU, and look, I respect the heck out of that university. I respect the heck out of anybody's sets of beliefs. But you go to that game, you're not allowed to drink a Coke, a coffee, nothing. As somebody who drinks copious amounts of caffeine and enjoys the occasional alcoholic beverage, that was not my favorite place to be.
No. Well, the good news is I seriously doubt that the Bearcats will sign up for another game at BYU anytime soon.
Oh, I guarantee you that.
You've got time to find a new job.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the end of that game where they were losing by 14 and didn't have a really good chance to win, but Tommy Tuberville took his timeouts with him on the plane, I think you got the sense that everybody just wanted to get out of Provo. Like, for once, I was grateful. I was grateful for the Bearcats not, you know, extending the game, if you will.
Yeah, good on them. They were just as miserable as – hey, Tubbs, he's the type of guy that would do that type of thing. He just wanted, let's just get on the plane and get on out of here. We know that much about him. Well, hey, again, Mo, definitely appreciate you joining us on the podcast, and we will talk to you again soon. Next time, live with Mo Egger from Provo, Utah.
Thank you as always, sir.
All right, good stuff on this week's podcast. And next week we will have a game to digest again, a big game. And I think a lot of, regardless of what happens on Sunday between the Bengals and the Steelers, it will, I think, awaken one side or the other in a very important way. If the Bengals right. can win, that will feel like a pretty big breakthrough, I think, where everybody should be on board believing that this is the team that can make that special run. If they lose, I think it feels a little bit of a, okay, well, now you're set for a battle.
Right.
It's going to be, it just got a little bit more real if the Steelers slam them back to reality. So we'll see what happens. All right, so we've got to go out with a little bit of music here, and I'm telling you, I'm not feeling like I've really got anything. And so, you know what we do? We just go to Outkast because I like them.
Yeah.
And I just want to hear them all the time. So
it works.
We're going to go the same thing that, oh, which, by the way, someone asked me, someone didn't, a couple people actually said that they didn't like the open. They don't, they didn't like the Spodeody Dopalicious open. Most said that they did like it and asked me, what is that?
Right.
No. So it's Spodeody Dopalicious by Outkast. It's a great funky little jam. And to those that don't like it, well, sorry, find another podcast because that ain't changing because Outkast's my voice. All right. And huge shout out to 50 West who brew up the Spodeody Dopalicious every
true.
October. And I had it for the first time this weekend. It was fantastic. It's actually, Odie is for, it's an oatmeal base to it, so that's where the name comes from.
Right,
is they wanted something with oat in it, and so they pulled that out. Huge ups to my friends, good friends out at 50 West. If I continue to talk about 50 West, maybe they'll give me a free growler of it or something like that. So anyway, I'm gonna bring in a little Outkast because I like them and they're awesome. And outside of that, we will talk to you next week on the BBP.
Even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie and sometimes lie. Nothing is for sure, nothing is for certain. Nothing lasts forever but until they close the curtain. Y'all know it's Tim and I, a woman I.
Now it's the time to get on like Spike Lee said, get on the bus. Go get your work and keep your beeper chirping, it's a must. Did you want that dust? Cornstarch, familiar with that smack, man. The music is like that green stuff, provided to you by Sack Man, Pac-Man. How many think we gon' do that, man? Ride on national, on 18s, without no gap, man. I'm strapped, man, get rid of the bus on anything like that, man. Me and my we roll together like Batman and Rob Band. We prayed together through hard times, swung hard when it was fitting. But now we tapping the brakes from off them corners that we be bending. And Volkswagen and Bonnevilles, Chevrolets and Coupe de Villes. If you ain't got no rims, don't get no wood grain steering wheel, for real. You can go chill out a steel bill. Let your paper stack instead of going to overkill. Pay your people bill.
Even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie, and sometimes why? Nothing is for sure, nothing is for certain. Nothing lasts forever, but until they close the curtain, it's him and I, or Quim and I.
Twice upon a time, there was a boy who died. Lived happily ever after, but that's another chapter. Live from home of the brave, with dirty dollars, beauty parlors, baby ballers, bowling ball and parlors, street scholars, majoring in culinary arts. You know how to work with bread, cheese, and dough from scratch. But see, the catch is you can get caught. Know what you're selling, what you bought, so cut that big talk. Let's walk to the bridge, meet me halfway. Now you may see some chilling dead off in the pathway. It's them poor babies walking slowly to the candy lady. It's looking bad, need some hope, like the words maybe. If, or probably, more than a hobby. When my turntables get wobbly, they don't fall. I'm sorry, y'all, I often drift. I'm talking gifts, so when it comes, you never look the horse inside its grill. Of course you know I feel like the bearer of bad news. Don't want to be it, but it's needed, so what have you. Now question, is every zebra dreads for the cause? Is every zebra gorgeous for the fall? No, so don't get caught up in appearance. It's Outkast, Aquemini, another black experience. Thank you.
Even the sun goes down. Heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie, and it's sometimes why. Nothing is for sure, nothing is for certain. Nothing lasts forever, but until they close the curtain, it's him and I, Aquemini.